Hello everyone, welcome to Ubi Est Mia. My name is Brandon Weatherby. This episode is with touring musician Daniel Knox. Daniel is also the guy that writes our theme music, and I've been collaborating with him on and off for well over a decade now. We talked about recording, playing in other countries, having a better reception in other countries, growing up in Springfield, and more. Thanks to the Hungry Brain, we did this in the basement, and it sounds like we recorded in a basement, and I really like it. So without further ado, here's Daniel Knox. Does this make you feel uncomfortable?
What, having a...
Having a microphone in your face.
I have a microphone on my face all the time, man. I'm not worried about it.
That doesn't necessarily make you feel comfortable.
I mean, having a man stick a microphone in my face and hold it there is slightly uncomfortable for a protracted period of time. However, I am used to having a microphone in my face and talking into it.
Well, good.
Knowing that my voice will live in some form.
Do you like your voice?
You know, it's funny you mention that. We were recording all day today at Electrical, and I love my singing voice. I've come to really love it, and I fucking hate my speaking voice.
Why?
I guess it's those little tags at the end where, you know, you say stupid things. I think we got it, you know, or you feel, I know how to speak to an audience, and I know how to have a conversation, but those little exclamatory things that you say, you know, when your voice is kind of caught unawares, those are the things that I don't like about my voice.
Do you listen back to live shows?
I don't as much as I probably should.
Okay. Have you ever listened back and heard the banter and it made you regret the show?
On a few occasions, I've said things that I felt like were not nice things to say about people who are still around to hear them. But I don't regret doing that.
So in... You don't regret doing
it? I learned not to do it from doing it, didn't I?
Okay. So I don't know.
You know.
Why are you still in Chicago?
I'm still in Chicago because I have a record that I've been trying to finish for 10 years that I've officially booked its completion date for September 1st. So that's it. I don't owe Chicago anything after that.
But do you feel like you did owe Chicago something before that?
I feel like I had things I needed to say to Chicago in shows and in songs, and, you know, this record is a breakup record. I've been breaking up with, you know, several girlfriends over the course of making it, so it's changed in that regard, but it's also a breakup record with Springfield, Illinois, and with Chicago. So it's a breakup record in a much grander sense.
You're from Springfield. You grew up there. Zero to 18?
Yeah.
Do you feel more connected to Springfield or Chicago?
I feel more connected to Springfield because I actually give a shit when things change down there. Things change in Chicago, and it kind of just seems like that's what Chicago does.
Okay.
Chicago cannibalizes itself. And I mean, Springfield does that too, but I guess... it's more, it stings more when it happens down there.
Why?
Because, you like to, I mean, I think everyone thinks about their childhood, as sort of living on in some way, and to know that it's actually...
Are you afraid of nostalgia, or do you embrace it?
Define nostalgia.
Looking back with a wistful eye?
I would say that I have a, I would say I'm afraid of looking at it with too much sentiment, you know?
Okay.
Which isn't to say that I think, you know, that I want to look back at it, and with bitterness or cynicism,
also,
but
you could also not look back at it. It could be something that is not even in your rear view.
I feel like I've done nothing but look into my immediate past for the last for a good portion of my songwriting career. And then I put out that self-titled record, which had a lot of sort of, you know, looking back further, and now I'm kind of done doing that.
One of the good things about that record, the self-titled record, is there are specific details, specific street corners.
Sure.
By the Venture is right. The song I'm thinking of. I love that song because Venture, for a lot of people, means nothing.
Sure.
And for a lot of people, it means a specific type of... It's literally a department
store. But what I liked about that was I liked the idea of it not... It doesn't tell you very specifically that it's a department store.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't tell you specifically, like, that you're in Springfield. I didn't say the name Springfield anywhere. I like the idea of, like, you know, somebody who is from a very specific place trying to explain it to someone who has never been there and has no interest in it.
Have you done that with anywhere in Chicago?
No, and I don't know if I ever will. Maybe I'll probably be an old man before I'm interested in doing that. I'm bored with it. I've lived here since I was 18 years old.
And you're still living here.
I'm still.
Maybe that's the difference. Maybe there's that disconnect, because I don't think when you were 19 you were writing about Springfield. I mean, at 19 you...
No, when I was 19 I was probably... I mean, Springfield was the furthest thing from my mind, and I felt like I actively hated it, you know, like
yeah.
all my high school experiences were very, very new, a lot of sort of fresh wounds there, and I felt like it was what was holding me back. It wasn't in retrospect, you know. I think I actually was thriving there creatively, in spite of some discouragement from various corners of the town, but I think I got a lot done there.
Sure. Do you feel like that when you play Springfield, it's like a homecoming show, or is it just an interesting spot on the tour itinerary?
I have never played Springfield. I've played there one time.
I thought you played multiple times.
I played Springfield on...
I feel like there was a hotel involved.
Oh, well, that was different. That wasn't a show. That was
like... Oh, okay.
I mean, that, you know, John Atwood used to... bring people from the...
John Atwood, for the listener at home, is a very talented photographer.
Yes.
Okay.
Who grew up in Springfield as well, but we didn't know each other then.
Yes.
But he used to, you know, when we would go drink at the Hilton down there, he would grab everybody from the bar, sneak into the ballroom of the Ramada across the street, steal the entire contents of the bar, create an audience, and then put on a little show. But that wasn't a show, you know what I mean, in the sense of, like... It wasn't billed anywhere. It was a spontaneous sort of random occasion.
I feel this is where we get to the nostalgia part. That seems so romantic and wonderful.
It was. It was romantic
and of
wonderful.
A time that I don't know if now, as an adult man with multiple records,
well, you know, two guys in their early 20s, like it's a little. It's the kind of thing that you do. You know,
of course.
If I tried to go up to this bar above us right now and get everybody's, you know, try to motivate everyone to come with me somewhere. I've come with me on an adventure. You know, I'm sure it would go over.
That being said,
not very well.
If you wanted to play right now, they'd be down. And
that's because you would make them, and that's how it always works. Though it's like, you know, someone like you or someone like John, you know, giving me a spot to sit and do what I do.
Do you feel connection to your listeners? I don't want to say fans because that feels weird.
It doesn't feel weird. I got
does
fans.
It not?
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
It's not like you can say you have fans. It's not like I'm saying I have like a legion of fans. My fans are a very spread out and peculiar cross section of the universe. I'm very, very proud of them.
That's exactly what I wanted to talk about. You have a fan base that I hope this is not insulting is bigger not in this country.
Yes, although I've found that, like, in the States, it tends to be teenagers. A lot due to Welcome to Night Vale, who used a song of mine from my first record. And I get wonderful, wonderful letters and emails from these people.
What's that song?
What Have They Done to You Now?
Which is, okay, I did not plan this. I promise you this. For the listener at home, we are currently in the basement of the Hungry Brain. The Hungry Brain was around for about 15 years, and it closed at the end of 2014. It reopened at the end of 2015.
Uh-huh.
I just did a show. You just came from recording down the street.
Right.
We happened to both be in town.
Right.
I wanted to catch you. We happened to be in the basement, where we made a video for that song. I don't think you even knew what I wanted to do or what we were doing. I want to say 6 years ago, 7 years ago. It's been a while.
It's been longer than
I
that.
I lived in Chicago at that time. And I it's been
Well, that record came out in 2007, 2008.
So it might have been like 2008, 2009
yeah.
when we made a video. It was a single take video. And that's one of the handful of video things that I've done with you that I'm proud of.
I get good feedback from that.
Yeah.
People tell me that they like it. So.
That's when you could still smoke in bars. That's how long ago that was.
That's right.
Okay. One of the reasons I brought that up is because you're about to release something. It's not really an official release. It wouldn't be part of the canon. It might be a B-sides collection here, you might call it. I don't know.
It's, I mean, you know, it's not going in stores. It's, I'm going to post this online. You can get it at danielknox.bandcamp.com.
There'll
and
be a
it's
link.
Going
no
to be a, it's fine. It's a collection of music that I've written for other people's films between the years, I want to say 2009 and now.
When you were making that music, were you ever reticent to actually make the music because you didn't like the product that you saw?
No.
Okay, that's very kind.
I mean, if I thought something was like extraordinarily shitty, or said something really stupid, I would definitely not do it or not put it, you know, not include it.
Well, I'm asking for selfish reasons because a lot of this has been stuff that I asked you to do and you were kind enough to do it.
Yeah, but it was great for me because it gave me, like, I was just listening back to, you made that movie, The Shuffle.
Yeah.
And I was just listening back. I broke it into two different suites because you asked me to score it and then you took all the dialogue out and decided to make it a silent film and asked me to just patch up those moments. Mm-hmm. And both of those groups of music both work as really nice suites of piano music. And I was listening back to those yesterday because I was mastering it, you know, for release. And they work pretty well. I was pretty proud of them.
That movie was not supposed to be a silent movie. And it took about 18 months to go from spoken to silent. And both are still way too long, and I'm not. I'm really glad I made those films, but I am not proud of them in the least.
Yeah, but think about it. You learned something making those.
Absolutely,
and so did I.
And I've learned a lot. Like the only film I ever made. By the way, for the listener home, there's a happy birthday going on above us.
They can probably hear it.
That's perfect. I love that. That's going on right now. We actually made a film that you were not involved with. In the Hungry Brain basement, where we are standing right now, it was a one-take video, or one-take film. Not good at all. Incredibly glad I did it, and I cannot watch it.
That's the only one I didn't do music for.
That's the only
for,
one
right?
You didn't do. You also did something. I did the 48-hour film project.
Right. That's probably the weakest of those tracks that I did, the ones I did for you, because I played guitar on it, and I can't play guitar.
That is my favorite, one of my favorite of it, because you can't play guitar. And I want to say you played like two strings at a time. Like, you didn't strum it at all.
No, yeah, I played like two at a time, and it was a shitty guitar that my friend Damon gave me before he moved to Japan, and it was like a little guitar for a child.
I like that score more than most. Also, that is the least. I hate that so much. What I made
the film.
The film is atrocious. I hate it.
I thought it had some nice moments.
It was a thought experiment. You know what I mean?
What else do I have? I did a 28. You asked me for 28 minutes of music for something I don't think I ever even saw.
Okay, so what happened was I asked you for a throwaway track, like an hour throwaway track.
No. 28 minutes.
I know. I'm getting to that.
Okay.
And I asked, and you gave me the hour throwaway track because when I first got my iPhone, I want to say four, maybe iPhone 4, a handful of years ago, maybe five, I wanted to cut together a film on my phone. I wanted to make a film about movement with the camera never moving. Real artsy bullshit.
Man with the movie camera, that was your, I remember that.
Exactly, right? So I did that, but the whole point was I'm going to edit it, I'm going to shoot it and cut it within the phone. But I needed like something beautiful to tie it together, and that's where your music came in. So I would listen to the music while I was cutting it and like place parts in certain places, etc. I am actually pretty proud of that one, and that's actually gotten the biggest positive reception.
Have I ever seen that?
Yeah, you have. You have.
I don't remember seeing that.
The
hour-long one I've seen. But
that's the hour-long one. That's
okay.
The hour-long one.
What about
and then I asked you for a 28-minute one because I was going to do the same thing but reverse. I was going to do everything backwards at half the time.
Right, but what I did was I played 14 minutes of music,
yes,
and then reversed it,
yeah,
and that's the 28 minutes.
Exactly.
But it actually really, it really works well, because I played real fast, and then I slowly just played, you know, slower and slower, and then it does the same thing, it speeds up.
And in theory, that will one day come out.
Well, it's coming up, the music's coming out.
Yeah, and here's the thing I like about you. We're very different people.
Yes.
We met at the Music Box Theater.
Yes.
A very, very long time ago. I was playing shows. You were not playing shows.
We also had a different attitude about it that I think I share your attitude a lot more now.
I would say my attitude is do it and keep screwing it up, and then hopefully sooner or later it's
well, you also, I remember you saying that, like, I should play any show.
Yes.
And I don't believe that now, but I definitely think that, like, at that point, it was, you know, a worthwhile thing to do.
The difference between us and the shows, I thought that you should play every show ever.
Yes.
Yes.
I should have.
I don't think that held you back.
I said no to some shows that were probably things I should have done.
Like what? Do you remember any of them?
Well, I remember... No, but... Well, there was one guy I'm definitely glad I didn't, because he was such a little prick. I don't want to say who it was, because I'm not that big of an asshole.
Is this person still doing stuff?
Yes, he is.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. With people I know and work with, too.
This is over a decade ago.
Little... Fucking yeah! This is.
Let's not say his name or her name.
Definitely not, because I am a petty man, and but I don't need to, you know, share that.
Do you think being a petty man has hindered you at all?
Not at all. Not a bit.
Really?
No.
What's your biggest regret?
As in my career?
No, in life. Or is it too sensitive?
I don't. Yeah, I mean, it's probably it's probably spending more time with someone,
sure,
I should not have.
So it was a relationship thing.
Yeah.
Whatever. Musically.
But I can't look at it as a regret. You know what I mean? Like,
you
it's yeah. I should have learned sooner. I guess that's the regret part.
What do you regret being in this city for this long?
That is an incredibly difficult question, but the answer is yes.
Do you want to say your age or no?
Yeah, why not?
Well, what's your age?
35.
Okay, so you've been here almost half your life. 18 Springfield, 17 Chicago.
Shit, yeah, I guess
when
that's true.
When I met you, it was not supposed to be this way.
It was never supposed to be this way.
It was always supposed to be, from my point of view, Springfield, Chicago, then New York as soon as possible.
And yeah.
Then maybe Europe after that.
Yeah.
Now, you tour a lot. You play a lot of places. You'll have a
residency. I've seen more places than I probably would have if I had moved. So I think,
okay, why
I think,
is that?
Because Chicago's a place that lets you dig your heels in. It's cheap. It also kind of motivates you to get out and get exposure in other places because in spite of a wonderful audience that I have in this city who come to all my shows, wonderful people, I don't mean to disparage them, but it is hard to build up something that lasts here, that really gets, you know, it's a longer way to say I've hit the ceiling here, and I've seen it where I've gotten way above that ceiling in other places where I feel like, you know, I've had much more of an audience.
If you could live anywhere, where would you live?
If I could... That's funny. My daughter asks me that question sometimes.
I think it's a fair question.
Well, she asks me if you could go anywhere, where would you go? But I would go to Berlin.
To live or just visit?
To live.
And where's your favorite venue to play?
In Berlin?
Venue. Not Berlin, in the world. Venue. Not city. Venue.
Well... The best venue I ever played in my life was the Chicago Theater, but that doesn't mean I want to live here. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Okay. What's your favorite city to play? Is it Berlin?
My favorite city to play is London.
Why?
Because there's just so many different. I've played there more, I guess, than other places, and there's so many different kinds of places to play, and the audiences are so respectful and. You know, I always bring a lot of people out, and people shut the fuck up, you know.
That's a big thing with you.
Oh, yeah.
You want a respectful audience, and I don't think...
I demand one, is a difference. I don't sure. just want one. Sure. I expect one.
And I want one, and I don't expect one at all.
I know when I'm not going to get one, though. Yeah. You know what I mean? You get three chances. That's my rule. You get three chances, and the third time, you got to really let them have it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But sometimes it just takes one pitiful... soul that you can beat up on,
sure.
that you can make people realize, like, okay, if I fuck with this guy, it's gonna be, you know, difficult for me.
I love this about us because we both happen to be on stage a good amount, uh-huh. and we both have very different approaches to this. And the older I get, the less I care about that stuff. Because at the end of the day,
but the difference is you're encouraging people to kind of fuck with you.
Oh no,
yes
oh,
you
no.
are.
To a point, I don't ever want them to talk back. Ever.
Yeah, but the nature of what you're doing a talk show.
Sure, I'm not disagreeing. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But, at the end of the day, I want everyone there to have, like, to be grateful that they left their house.
Right.
And what you want to do, tell me if I'm wrong, is to really give it your all to the people that actually care,
mm-hmm.
and for the people that don't care, fuck them.
No, not fuck them.
Okay.
But
okay.
I wish they would just go home. You know what I mean?
Sure,
or like,
sure.
or I guess not fuck them. But if the show is in here, this is where the show is.
Yes.
If you don't like the show, you can express that to me by leaving.
Sure.
That lets me know a lot better. That makes me feel. That actually would make me feel worse than you talking through my show, because that makes me just feel like, well, fuck you. You know, it doesn't make me feel like, oh, like I'm not as good a performer because this asshole decided that he needed to talk through my whole show.
Does it matter if you're headlining or supporting?
What does what matter?
If you're opening for the Hanson.
There's a difference for sure.
Exactly.
Because I can't get that into it but this is the thing. When I was opening for Rasputina, there were a couple places where I probably stepped over that line. You know what I mean? Where I probably, like, made somebody feel worse than they've ever felt.
If you would like more information about Daniel Knox, just go to danielknox.com or click on the link in the podcast description. If you would like to buy the record we talked about, also, that's in there. It's danielknox.bandcamp.com. His music is playing right now. That's what you're hearing. Our art is by Dmitry Samaroff. My name is Brandon Weatherby. Thanks for listening and have a wonderful night.
Leave a hole, I hope you find a place to rest your talentless soul.